show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a baseball prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's been, well, there's been Royals baseball, and we will talk about it. But first, as always, introductions. I am Jeff Herr, and with me the man who has not yet, don't believe the fake news, folks, he has not yet been called to testify in front of Congress as of today, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this very wonderful, starting to feel like summer type evening?
It is feeling a bit like summer. It's been a week.
Starting to get that humidity in the air.
Yeah, there was one, like, I don't know, it was like Saturday night. I always like to hang out on the balcony when I can, and right. It was a little too sticky out there for that, so I was kind of disappointed. But, you know, that's the Midwest.
Yep, we've started this thing where, you know, at night when we get home after dinner, since it's still light outside later, we'll take a – we usually just get like some sort of bowl or something and fill it up with water, and we'll put it out in the front yard. And my daughter loves to just play, like, splash around in it with her hands and stuff. And the last couple times we've done it, it's been tough for us to stay out there for too long because the mosquitoes are just going crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's really summer when that happens.
Yeah, I hate those little...
literal buggers.
Yeah, I was going to say that, and I was like, well, that's too much. Nah, it's too on the nose.
Too literal.
Oh, well.
Speaking of summer, the boys of summer in full swing now. With Royals baseball coming along. And, you know, last week, Mike, we noted that the Royals were 7 games under 500, 5.5 games out of first place. The very week before, we noted they were 7 games under 500 and 5.5 games back. And we questioned, we wondered, would the cosmos be kind enough to give us a third week in a row in which the Royals are 7 games under 500 and 5.5 games back of the division, and I'll be damned if they aren't 25-32 and 5.5 games behind the Twins, which is both incredibly amazing that you've had 3 weeks in a row of recording on the same day, and it's into, they've been exactly the same amount of games below 500 and games behind the division leader, but also sadly depressing in the fact that that means the other four teams above the Royals have done absolutely nothing to further their lead and increase their division lead over the other remaining teams, and the Royals have not been able to take a single bit of advantage of it. It's quite quite unfortunate.
Yeah, that's not kind of what you want. I mean, what we talked about before was, you know, they need to kind of make some moves here. And, you know, for the briefest of moments, they were actually half a game above Chicago for the worst record in the American League. So, it's kind of disappointing because you've got teams ahead of them that, I'll give someone a dollar. I don't know who, some random person a dollar, if the Twins actually win the division, because they're not going to. They're not that good of a baseball team. Cleveland's going to figure it out, pull ahead, and probably run away with it, frankly.
Yeah, Cleveland wins by at least 5 games, I would guess.
Yeah, they're just a good team. The Twins, they'll falter. Tigers haven't been healthy all season, haven't been very good. Verlander just came out of a game early the other day, so... You know, the Royals can't take advantage of any of this. So it's kind of been difficult for them to build any kind of momentum at all because, you know, really it's you've got – you know, just look at that Cleveland series that started in Kansas City. Jason Vargas throws a shutout.
Mm-hmm.
Really good game. The next day, the Royals score their highest number of runs in a game all season. And then the next day, they lose 8-0. And, you know, now they're just kind of win one, lose one. Like you said, in the last couple of weeks, they pretty much haven't made up any ground. On the plus side, they haven't lost ground, but, you know, when you're last in the division, that's not really a positive. You know, you do have to make up that ground somehow. And when the other teams ahead of you aren't playing well, well, you got to do something. Something's got to pick up the team. Something has to spark them to go on some kind of a run, like we know the Royals can do. So I don't know. I mean, it's just something that to this point, they haven't had that breakout. So if they're going to actually make any kind of noise, now's the time to actually start doing that.
Yes, absolutely. Make a charge, run forward, do something. And the Royals are hoping that what occurred last night is what will take the Royals on this ride into the march towards first place, hopefully, at some point. But the Royals playing Houston Astros, best team in baseball, mind you, record-wise. And
working
probably
on an 11-game winning streak.
Yep. And they just jump all over the Royals to start the game. They go up 7-1 at one point, but did they go up 7-0? I can't recall.
It was 7-1. The Royals had it was like 3-1 at one point, and then the Astros kind of rallied and added.
And then they went to something like a 3-run home run they hit or something, and
they ended up 7-1. There was at one point the Royals were almost able to get out of the inning, but Chester Cuthbert threw it wide. And the inning continued, and then Carlos Beltran hit a home run right after.
Those things happen.
Yeah.
So they go up 7-1. All hope is lost. You know, better luck tomorrow, I suppose, is the prevailing thought for most people probably at the time.
Against Dallas Keuchel.
Yes. Yeah. But next thing you know, it's, you know, get a couple guys on, get a couple runs. It's 7-3. Okay. You know, maybe they can make this thing respectable. You know, they scored a couple more runs, and then next thing you know, the Royals come out in the eighth inning and tie it up. Was it? It was Whit Merrifield hitting Ken Giles? Because they brought him in the eighth.
Yep.
Right. I wasn't able to watch the full game, so I'm trying to recall the sequence of events, but the Astros reminded everyone that even as good as they are, they may have some back end of the bullpen issues that could rear their head later in the season if they come back to earth a little bit. But anyway, Ken Giles comes in, gives up in the eighth inning, gives up a double to Whit Merrifield, who continues to excel. Only the night before having lost his 19-game hitting streak, we were going to start a DiMaggio watch for Whit Merrifield, but that has come and since gone. But he started up a new streak last night, and the tying run scored. Then comes the ninth inning. Of course, Ken Giles still in there, and just serves one up right out there over the plate for none other than Mike Moustakas, who just absolutely launches it.
Yeah.
Past the bullpen into right field, and it's game over after that. There was a man on base, so it ended up being 9-7 was the final. And I'll tell you, Mike, if there's one thing, whether it's June or October, the Royals ripping the heart out of the Astros is just, it's always a fun thing to watch. I don't really have any reason to dislike the Astros. There's no history between the Royals other than 2015, of course. Mm-hmm. But that 2015 with it was McCullers, wasn't it, who did
the neck slap? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That.
So with McCullers, and then him getting into it with some Royals fans on Twitter and all the rest. So there's no love lost for the Astros, even if I don't dislike them like I do, say, the Blue Jays or the Twins or something. But I'm okay with pulling the rug out from under them, and no matter what time of the season it is. So yeah. That's pretty fun.
It was fun. It felt like that 2015 team for a little bit there, where they just kind of got the ball in play and it found a way in. You know, Chesler Cuthbert blooped one in to drive in a run. That Merrifield at bat was interesting because, like, Giles throws like 99. He's, 99 to 100. He's one of those guys. So he started out Merrifield with a slider. I don't remember if he swung at the first one or the second one. I think he swung at the first one, I think, and fouled it off. And the second one he took for a strike. And so it's 0-2, and he hasn't even seen the fastball yet. So I'm thinking, oh, crap. Merrifield's going to strike out. The fastball was outside, and then he serves up a slider that caught too much of the plate. Merrifield hits it into the left field and clears the bases. It was pretty cool to see that. And, the Royals haven't had a lot of games that have been really encouraging and just fun like that one. So to kind of mimic the game four, the ALDS comeback late, almost kind of in the same, similar manners at least. Mm-hmm. It was pretty fun. And that it's the Astros, yeah, I'm like you. I don't really have any ill will towards the Astros, but it's still fun to beat them that way. I definitely have more animosity towards the Blue Jays and the Orioles and, Cardinals and Twins. I've never liked the Twins. I'm never going to like the Twins. Sorry, Twins.
No, dislike the Twins.
Strongly. Yeah. So to win that way and to kind of do it in late inning dramatic fashion, and the punctuated by Moustakas just crushing that ball. I'm surprised it didn't go farther, but it was like it was immediate and no doubter when he hit it.
Yeah.
Which is just the coolest thing because then all you got to do is wait and watch.
Yeah, you see the crowd immediately erupt. I saw the highlights this morning for it, and you see the crowd immediately erupt.
It's like there's no question.
So fun. I mean, don't blame a lot of people for them being down 7-3 or whatever it was in the seventh inning if you packed it up and went home on a Tuesday night. But all the same, if you remained, then that's one of those awesome, awesome moments that you definitely you're glad you stuck around at that point.
Yep. And maybe it means nothing. Maybe it's just a random Tuesday game in June, but still pretty fun. And there's a really cool picture on Toby Cook, who's part of, PR and marketing and promotions. And I don't know his full exact title, but he does all that stuff. Public relations, whatever. Really cool photo on his Twitter where someone was taking a shot behind Rusty Kuntz as the ball was reaching its apex heading out. And he's just got his arms spread out. You can tell he's psyched. It's just really cool. So it was a cool night. It was a nice reminder of what the Royals can do sometimes. And hopefully that is something that, they can build off of, that they can take some of those individual performances from last night and kind of continue to do what they did last night and start hitting, start scoring some runs and winning some games. And maybe next week we can actually make up some ground on some of these guys.
Yes, that is the hope indeed. And with the home run for the walk-off that Moustakas hit, Mike, very important, possibly
the most
important aspect of this season as it moves forward, that is the 15th home run that Mike Moustakas has hit in 57 games played by the Royals. Now, that means that we have to take another look at our Balboni Watch calendar. And after 57 games in 1985, Steve Balboni was at 10 home runs.
Hmm.
So Mike Moustakas is a full 50% ahead of where Steve Balboni was, which, if that trend were to continue for the entire year, would put Moustakas at 54 home runs.
Oh, man.
I don't think that happens.
Probably
don't
not.
Don't think that happens. I'm calling it now. He's not going to hit 54 home runs. However, he is in a very, very good position to definitely break the long-standing record of 36 home runs and vanquished the Balboni homer demon, though...
the caveat.
Yes, he would not be truly exercised. He would only be replaced with the Moustakas homer demon if he just beat it by still going less than 40 home runs. I think in order to completely exercise all of Kauffman Stadium from all homer demons, the 40 home run plateau has to be reached. So vanquishing the Balboni homer demon is great, but don't stop there, Mike Moustakas. Mike Moustakas, if you're listening...
and why would he not be?
Why, of course. Don't stop at 36, or don't stop at 37. Keep going.
Hit that 40.
I only have one caveat. I only say keep going if you're still with the Royals. If you're not...
Right. If you go to Boston, you can stop at whatever.
Yeah. Stop at 25. They don't need more home runs there. They get plenty.
Right.
So that's fine. Yeah. But anyway, that's exciting stuff. Of all the things that we've seen in the Dayton Moore tenure, Cy Young Awards, All-Star MVPs, of course, World Series appearances, ALCS MVPs, World Series MVPs, an All-Star game, Silver Sluggers, Golden Gloves, you know, all of these things we've seen, the last thing to fall to fully solidify this as, you know, in terms of like awards and statistical things you can point to, that could solidify this as possibly, even though it may be shorter than the glory days of the Royals, the best era in Royals history, if you really think about it. I guess I'd have to go back and compare all the gold gloves. I guess that would be another thing. But
mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I guess Bo Jackson won an All-Star MVP. But that wasn't in the glory days. That was years later.
That was in the weird middle ground where they were still good but hadn't made the playoffs.
Essentially like they are now. Because what we're looking at here is we're comparing 1976 through 1985, that era, with 2013 to 2017, we'll call it. So through the end of this year. More time, obviously, for the previous era. But hey, if you're going to be better for an extended period of time, then you get more time to accumulate. That's the benefit of being better for a period of time.
Yeah, that's not really close on a record standpoint. But for, you know, individual performances.
Yeah, for games, definitely not. But for... Yes, because I don't see. was there a Cy Young winner in there?
Brett Sabrehagen in 85.
I thought he was 86 and 89. Was I thought when
it
he
was 85 and 89.
Was it okay?
Yep.
So he on the tail end of there. So that cancels that out because you had Greinke in 09.
Yep. And then David Cohn in 94, which again is
true, but that doesn't really fall in either era. Spot. Yeah. Let's see.
Golden he had batting titles, obviously. In
George Brett had the batting titles.
Willie Wilson had one also.
Right. Frank White had all the gold gloves. George Brett had one.
Yep.
Did Willie Wilson, Amos Otis, any of those guys win gold gloves? I can't remember. Let's check this out here.
Wilson may have.
I feel like Willie Wilson had won at least one gold glove, right?
I would think so.
Yes, 1980 he won a gold glove.
All right, that was a good year.
Yeah.
Decent.
That was an all right year.
If you're into that kind of, you know, 400 chase in a pennant and all that.
Yeah, you know, no big deal.
Yeah.
Man. Had some good years, didn't he?
Yeah.
but, you know, it's a testament, though, that at only 5 years of a window, you know, they're gonna. It's a conversation to be had.
Yeah.
Right. I guess
I would say that the accolades are somewhat comparable. The I don't know, the actual dominance and relevance is definitely in the favor of the older era. Yes. They made the playoffs like every year, but like two. in that
seven
stretch.
Out of 10 years, I think it was.
Yeah, I mean it's a plus really good stretch.
Plus having, you know, they made the World Series in 80 and 85, but then the best team they had was that 77 team that won 102 games and didn't make the World Series. Yep. So they had,
damn,
you know,
them Yankees.
So they had a third year where they were, you know, they didn't make the World Series, but they were the best team in baseball, which, you know, this team hasn't really had. They only had the one truly dominant year, and then 2014, of course, was a very good year, but they weren't best team in baseball category like they were in 15, of course. So
yeah, it's definitely a very good stretch, and if they can vanquish the home run record, all the better.
Yes,
it'd be a nice cherry on top for this window of the process.
Indeed, just one more thing.
Yeah, I think he's a rookie of the year too. I don't think they've had that in Dayton Moore's era. Hosmer finished third in 2011, but that was it.
Hosmer finished third, and Ventura finished third, didn't he? In 2014?
He may have.
I thought he did.
He was probably up there. He had a good season, so wouldn't be too surprised. Bonifacio is doing well this year, and
Ventura was sixth in rookie of the year.
Well, okay. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, so he got some votes.
Yeah, he got votes. It counts.
I thought they had another guy. I thought there was another close one. I must have been thinking of Lorenzo Cain finishing third in MVP.
Yeah. Hey, there's another.
In 15.
There's another feather in the cap, I guess.
Yeah. But anyway. So fun little conversation to have. But this era's not over yet. The Royals still have this season at the very least, and you know they haven't been able to make any ground really, as we've talked about. But there are some, you know, a couple weeks ago, it felt like it was the podcasts of that era,
right.
The era within the era, if you will. We're a little bit more somber because it was, you know, where is the improvement going to come from? The indications aren't there that anything will, that things are looking up, you know, and then even up to last week when Duffy gets injured and he's going to be out for almost 2 months, it's like, you know, just pack it in. We got nothing left. But, you know, we mentioned previously, we've seen the last few weeks, Eric Hosmer's really been tearing it up quite a bit. I mean, he's having a great season now. You'd like to, you know, home run totals to be up a little bit more than they are, but just, you know, average wise and production wise, he's doing really well after that just horrid start that he was on. Mike Moustakas, we already talked about. Whit Merrifield has been, we talked about his 19 game hitting streak. And let's see, I'm going to pull up his stats here to get the exact numbers. He's currently sitting at 299 batting average, 350 on base, and 490 slugging in 41 games. Small sample size, of course, but you know he's played 41 games, so even though he hasn't been, you know, full season, he's passed that kind of 40 game mark that we always talk about for him personally. Only 161 plate appearances, so it's still still small sample size, but you know it's not
nothing.
Not unbelievably small. Exactly. It's not nothing. And he's got 6 home runs with Merrifield. He only had 2 home runs in 81 games and 332 plate appearances last year. So he's definitely focused on improving some things, and so far it's had good results.
Yeah, I like what he does. He's cut his strikeouts down. He's walking about the same, but the power's really coming through. You know, he spent the offseason putting on muscle, and it's showing. You know, he hit well in spring training. He hit a few homers in Omaha before he got called up. And since he's been in the big leagues, he's, you know, he had 2 doubles last night, a couple of home runs, a couple that weren't even, you know, they were pretty much no doubters. So, you know, he's playing really well. A 19-game hitting streak really does help that, but, you know, still gets credit for it. He's still got a hit in 19 straight games, and then after an over, and got moved to the top of the lineup. Escobar's not leading off anymore. So the Royals are 1-1 since that change. So
Whit leadoff magic is what you're
trying
to say. Whit
leadoff magic. Yeah, and, you know, last night it paid off. It was nice to have Whit Merrifield batting in the spot with the bases loaded instead of Alcides Escobar. So, you know, that's food for thought. Yeah, he's playing really, really well. He's playing really well at second base on defense too. So, you know, pretty impressive. It's a lot of people are kind of questioning, okay, well, why didn't he get the start at the beginning of the season, which is a fair question. And when you look back at spring training, I think Mondesi, I mean, he played well. You can't say that he didn't play well, but I think they did make a call internally early in spring training that, okay, he has shown enough, and that ended up, you know, where Whit Merrifield and Christian Colon were now trailing, and they never really overtook Mondesi. And it really required Mondesi to come up and struggle like he did for them to actually make the change. Since they have, Mondesi's played well in AAA. Merrifield's playing well at the major league level. They just called up Ramon Torres today to play as kind of a utility infielder. He got the start today in place of Alcides Escobar, which is notable because Escobar just beat the franchise consecutive games streak or something. And also it's Escobar. So,
yes.
But it shows that they also wanted to leave Mondesi down in AAA to play every day. So they want him to continue to make those developments and adjustments and you know, give him an opportunity to see advanced pitching, but not be overwhelmed like he has been in the big league level. And maybe that'll pay dividends, you know, eventually when he does come back up and, you know, they can end up finding an actual second baseman. And then by the time Mondesi is ready, he comes up and does that. But Merrifield so far has been really impressive. You do kind of wonder what he might have been able to do to this point if he had started from day one. But, you know, he's here now, and I think they're pretty comfortable with him at second base. And it's probably going to be something that, you know, he holds on to for the rest of the year.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think that's something that we wondered, you know, why wasn't Whit given the chance, given that, you know, he had his little bit of a downside last year, but when he came back up at the end of the season, you know, he seemed to right the ship, and his end of the year line looked pretty good. So, you know, why wasn't he given that shot? And then, you know, even though Mondesi got off to a good start in spring training and then kind of tailed off, you know, it would have been, we talked about kind of a little bit more valuable maybe for him to be in a less pressure filled environment of being in AAA, you know, because we talked, not only is it just more pressure in the major leagues, but just the pressure of this particular season having so much, you know, weight to it, being the last year for so many players, at least in terms of their current contracts and whether or not they'd be back in the future. Who knows? That's up in the air, the proverbial last year of the window. So it's, you know, it's on one hand, it's kind of frustrating that we were all talking about this at the beginning of the season about how, you know, they should have just given more time for Mondesi in the minor leagues and maybe played a Whit Merrifield or a Christian Colon when he was still on the team, you know, maybe played him at second base instead to start the season. He wouldn't have been much worse off, really. But, you know, unfortunately, that's not the way it worked out. But now it at least looks like with them bringing up Torres, as you mentioned, you know, it's their, it seems like they've kind of understood, okay, let's give Mondesi some time to breathe. You know, he's moved so quickly through this organization mm-hmm. and all these different levels. He's, when you've been young at every level, you know, have you really had time to kind of grasp the jump from one level to the next and be able to acclimate yourself? And, you know, he had been good enough to say, okay, well, we, you know, they can move him forward, I guess. But, you know, not good. And he wasn't dominant at any level. So it's nice that they've kind of given him that chance, you know, so it's not going to be any pressure of, is he going to play? Is he not going to play over, you know, him versus Merrifield, whatever, you know, I think they're at this point solidified. Merrifield's our guy at second base, you know, Torres, we can kind of use him however we see fit. I think there was some, you know, we were talking in the Slack chat today, Clint was kind of a little excited about what Torres could do, and thought maybe it'd be smart for the Royals to put Torres in at shortstop possibly, and kind of more or less as a tryout for next year, really, since Escobar might not be back, as he's a pending free agent as well. So, you know, it's kind of, it'll be interesting to see how they work him in, if they do at all. You know, Ned Yost said today that he absolutely has no intention of putting Escobar on the bench.
Yeah, and I was wrong. I thought for some reason they didn't play Escobar today, but they did. Torres is at second.
Well, Merrifield's playing in left. Everyone was just assuming he wouldn't play today.
Yeah,
but he's Ned Yost, and the way we're right. talking about it today in the chat, I would guess there is a 90% chance that Ned Yost is not back next year with all the players possibly leaving, likely leaving. Ned Yost wanted to retire for the last few years anyway, as far as I understand it, or I don't know if they wanted to retire,
but he has it on the horizon.
Yes.
Yeah,
wants
looking
to
at
be
it.
Retired soon. And I think honestly, had they not won the World Series, and or had, you know, this core group of guys together, I don't know that he would have stayed as long as he has. But anyway, with that possibility of him being gone next year, I don't know that he cares all too much about development of any younger guys for the future. You know, he's got his guys that brought him a World Series championship. He's going to root for them, and he's going to, you know, give them the kind of the dance with the girl that brought you, the idea that he has been a player's coach. He's gone to bat for his guys, literally almost when it comes to Escobar, where he's let him stay up there and try and work through his difficulties. And it did pay off, in many situations. Those days appear to be gone, but you know, he's still stumping for his dudes, and that's who Ned Yost is. And that's what's going to happen. So it will be interesting to see how they use Torres. And I hope they do give him a shot at, you know, him and Merrifield in there together, you know, at put him at short or something, you know, that can, you know, give them some time to see how they react together. 'Cause that could be your starting duo up the middle there next year. Who knows, you know, if they want to, if Mondesi stalls out this year for some reason, which I hope that does not happen, but if that were to be the case,
very Royals of it, for that to happen. But
they want to give him a little bit more time to start next year, then you know, you could see that as something that is a definite possibility. Something that could happen in the future, so you might as well be prepared.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not like Escobar is playing well this year anyway.
No,
and it doesn't hurt to have a backup plan. You know,
nope.
Torres is having a really good year in Omaha. He's got 5 homers down there. He's not really been a home run guy. He hardly strikes out at all. So, yeah, I mean, he's got pretty good reviews for being kind of a consistent guy. Probably, you know, I would never expect him to be a superstar, but, you know, there's some potential. We'll see if it comes through and what he gets to do in Kansas City, but you know, it's a pretty cool moment to see him come up too. So he's being rewarded with a few days in the big leagues, or maybe a few weeks. I don't know. Based on a really good start in Omaha, so it's promising. Yeah.
And you know, it just kind of occurred to me, but when you look at who the Royals have coming through the system, I mean, they could almost field an entirely Latino roster in the next over the next couple of years. Like if Chester Cuthbert is at third base, and then you've got either Mondesi or Torres at shortstop, and then if one or the other went over to second base, you know, obviously Whit Merrifield's got the competition there, and then you know, I think most people think Ryan O'Hearn has the inside track at first base, but Samir Duenas, right, is you know making some heads turn a little bit. You got Jorge Bonifacio, who's done really well in his limited time this season. So he could be a thing to plug in, a plug in spot for the future. You've got Jorge Soler, who we haven't talked about yet.
I guess he would DH in this scenario.
Yeah, he just got demoted. But so, you know, it's and you could have Salvador Perez obviously behind the behind the plate.
Not sure on center field.
Yeah, I was trying to say, I was like, I don't know who the center fielder is.
Not really a center fielder in place. No. Baba, Paulo Orlando, I guess.
But I mean, you could, you know, could have seven Latino players in the, and let's see. I'm trying to think if any of those.
Well, yeah, Gordon hanging around too. So
right, right.
He's got to play somewhere.
Right.
So there's probably maybe six out
and
of.
Those are, and those were all Latin American signees, right? None of those were drafted.
Let me. I mean, you would only be drafting guys from Puerto Rico. So, yeah, I mean, those would be signees.
Yeah. I was trying to think because, like, I don't remember.
If it was Orlando, he was a trade. Soler obviously was a trade.
Right.
But, yeah. Cuthbert, Mondesi, Perez.
So, kind of interesting. Just kind of occurred to me just now, but that's
well, considering where the historically the Royals didn't do a lot of, you know, development or scouting in Latin America, just, you know, throughout the majority of their early existence, and there wasn't that much of a Latin program when Dayton Moore took over, and that was one of the things that he really did bump up. I mean, then you bring in Kelvin Herrera, Salvador Perez, Yordano Ventura, Raul Mondesi, Jorge Bonfacio, Eli Hernandez, you know, all of these different guys who have, you know, Chester Cuthbert, even the, Orlando Calixte, who's playing in the big leagues for San Francisco. And
the biggest signing that never even made it out of Double A of Noel Arguelles.
Oh, God.
I mean, was it $7 million he signed for?
It was something like that. It was a big contract.
6.9 million, maybe. I mean, it was one of the largest at the time, and he was supposed to be a big time prospect, and he just
never got it.
He peaced out real quick.
Yep. But yeah, that's a big hallmark. Hey, there's another feather in the cap for this era. They developed a lot of Latin talent, and it's, you know, they've got a bunch of different academies in the Dominican and Venezuela, and yeah, it's a good place to invest your time and energy.
Absolutely.
When you've got just a whole continent of talent down there.
Absolutely.
A whole gulf of talent if you're looking at the Dominican and in Cuba and all that too. So,
and while we've got an eye towards the future, I think we can make kind of a couple comments here on the, believe it or not, MLB amateur draft is next week.
Yeah, right? That is came it up. It's
Monday
on,
or Tuesday?
Monday will be the first round, which that snuck up.
I didn't
have it on my radar.
You mentioned it in the email today, and I was like, oh, crap, it is June, isn't it? Man.
Yeah, and Clint Scholes has been doing, like, draft previews and profiles and such, like, basically from, you know, the spring training on, and I guess I just took it for granted that the draft day actually comes up.
Yeah.
Clinton's not just going to be doing these profiles for fun. There's an actual endpoint to where it's not just, you know, previews and thoughts. It's, you know, hey, they actually have to go draft these guys now. So, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, so Clint's been putting up some some really good articles talking about different guys, and as of, you know, on the front page today at bpkansascity.com, he's got kind of a breakdown of the whole draft and who, you know, the Royals should pick. What kind of, you know, he gets into the real nitty gritty. I mean, he's talking, you know, picks into the hundreds of what he's got, because he's got an insane amount of knowledge about prospects and amateur players.
I want to see Clint's, like, TV setup, because he's checking out every minor league game for Royals affiliates. He's got all these different college games and stuff. He pays attention to all these prep guys. I'm just like, I got to figure it's like the, like, I don't know, one of those big,
like,
producer
cave in The Dark Knight, where it's got, like, all, like, the 150 TV screens.
Yeah.
And they all, yep.
That's, he's just got every regional game you can find, and he's just paying attention to all these guys. Because, you know, he's got insight on a ton of these guys. And
yeah, I don't know how he does it.
I don't either. And once the draft ends, he's going to be contacting basically every coach for every Royals draftee to get some insight too. Just incredible hustle on Clint's part. So,
absolutely. And we haven't been able to confirm with him, but we're going to try and see if he has time to come on the show next week to kind of talk about whoever the Royals end up drafting. Again, not confirmed, so we'll see if
we'll
if
have to talk to him. He might be on a bender of reading videos and scouting reports, and
whether
and
it's
that.
Next week or in the couple weeks after,
maybe the week after,
we'll be able to find a time for to get him on and talk about some Royals draft picks. But just to throw some names out there, with the 14th pick, which is the Royals' first pick, that he mentions Tristan Lutz. I think it's Lutz. I think that's how you pronounce that. L-U-T-Z. But prep outfielder from Texas.
It's a good place to come from if you're going to play baseball.
Sounds like kind of a bigger guy. Got some good power. People are that's what is impressing people. It seems to be his power. But he's at 6'3", 220 pounds in high school. And they're thinking he could fill out even a little bit more. So he's going to be a big, big kid. So definitely could have some big time power.
Yeah. Has played some center. Probably, you know, if he's that big now and he's going to fill out, he's probably going to end up on a corner. But, you know, if he could stay in center and be a good home run guy, that'd be something. The Royals haven't had a ton of success with, you know, prep center field freaks of nature, Bubba Starling. But, you know, it's a nice option to throw out there. And they keep getting tied to prep level starting pitchers too, which makes me a little nervous because Ash Russell was taken a couple of years ago and has not panned out at all. And Nolan Watson, I think, was taken right after him, and he hasn't done much either. So it makes me a little nervous, but, you know, I don't know. There's some value in going for those guys because a lot of times the development can be swift and you know, they may have more upside, or you may have college guys who can, you know, have a little more track record, maybe a little more certainty behind them, but they're also going to start at an older age. And, you know, so maybe the learning curve, the development curve is a little less exponential or something. You know, it's a tough call for the Royals. If they're truly rebuilding after this year, they probably have time to wait on some prep guy, but I guess we'll have to see if, you know, what they do. But that's what, like, a lot of mock drafts keep tying them to those guys, like, you know, like Trevor Rogers, who Clint mentions.
And Sam Carlson is another name that's mentioned as far as a young pitcher. But yeah, I share your same apprehension in regards to this club, specifically their recent track record with prep pitchers. I mean, the prognosis on Ash Russell seems like it gets worse. Every time I hear something, it seems like it gets worse. Like, there have been periods where with Bubba Starling, Kyle Zimmer, etc., that the kind of talk has been like, oh, maybe they're on an upswing, you know, things are actually going well, maybe they can, you know, bring this momentum, and then Bubba Starling will go 0-for-78 over his next however many games, and then Kyle Zimmer will you know, his arm will fall off and have to be reattached again.
Sure.
So those get kind of derailed, but really, really feels like with Ash Russell, he just, every time you hear about him, it's just that his velocity dropped 5 more miles per hour or something like that. I mean, I think they got him because he was a hard thrower, and, you know, he can barely hit 90 now, so it's kind of a perplexing. Well, it's not all that perplexing, but it's just not. It's unfortunate. So
yeah, and they haven't had a lot of success on, you know, early draft picks in general the last few years. So it's, you know,
makes
me wonder.
Since, I mean, Aaron Crow was really the last, I guess you could call him successful. I mean, he was an all-star, so
yeah,
whatever that's worth.
I mean, Finnegan did his thing, and he's had some good starts for Cincinnati.
Cleats in the Hall of Fame.
I guess Manaea's pitched really, really well for Oakland.
That's true. Yeah, forget about the guys
as a supplemental guys. So yeah, you know, maybe that's maybe it's unfair, but still, you know, when you get you graduate Moustakas, you graduate Hosmer, you get Cologne up.
Even the guys, of that era,
yeah,
were supposed to be good. I mean, Duffy's the only one, I guess. You know, Mike Montgomery is, you know, was on the Cubs on the World Series last year, World Series champion. So, but he's still a reliever though, and he was supposed to be a big time starter. So, you know, he took a while to pan out. You know, and I guess Jake Odorizzi's doing pretty well for himself. But John Lamb, I mean, he's not really doing anything, you know, unfortunately. And he's had some injury problems, so it's not
some injuries and other off the field stuff. And yeah,
so I mean, their track record, it's been, you know, I guess if you really break it down, you know, it's been hit or miss with most teams.
That's true. Because you get 50 picks, and if you get like three to make your big league club and be good, you're in pretty good shape.
Right.
You know, the guys after like 20, you really don't figure are going to do much.
Yeah, I mean, you see was that hashtag tin stop or whatever? There's no such thing as a pitching prospect.
Yeah, yeah. When even the good ones don't really work out, it's like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the occasionally you get a freakish development like, you know, what the Mets currently have. And, you know, what the Braves had in the 90s. But even those were fueled by, you know, the Mets traded for Syndergaard. You know, they didn't draft and develop him. And the, you know, the Braves traded for Maddux back in the day. So, you know, it's really tough to, completely develop an entire pitching rotation completely on your own. I mean, I'm trying to think the
Rays that, like, have been 08, pretty good at turning like those guys out.
12 Rays. What was it? That was like one of my favorite stats, like 2013 or 2014 or something, where the Rays had like something like 72 consecutive games started by a pitcher they drafted or some ridiculous thing. You remember what I'm talking about?
Sounds about right. Sounds like their kind of thing.
Oh man, it was just phenomenal. Let's see.
Yeah, that would be a heck of a run. Yeah, that's 2 months straight every day someone you developed. The Dodgers are pretty good at developing some of those top guys. I mean, if it was easy, everybody would do it. That's, you know, the obvious thing. The Royals have had some talent, but it's not, you know, they usually it's kind of hit the wall in AA or AAA, or guys get hurt. You know, Kyle Zimmer's probably still got a lot of talent compared to a lot of guys you might see in the minor leagues, but if he's not on the mound to demonstrate it, well, you know, does it? It's like Schrodinger's prospect. Is he really a prospect or not? That's not really the right principle, is it?
Say that again.
Oh, I was just like, if Zimmer has talent, but he's not on the mound to show it until he shows it, he's like, yep. It doesn't really make sense. It's not the right.
Physics if a tree falls in a forest.
Basically, yeah, right? Yeah. So, It's a tough thing to develop the pitching when you can do it. You know, you've got cost-effective arms. You've got trade currency. Like Dayton Moore's always said, currency is the or pitching is the currency of baseball. But yeah, it's not easy. I mean, even the Cubs, they went out, they got John Lester. They had to trade for Jake Arrieta and kind of luck into that. Kyle Kendricks, you know, John Lackey. A lot of their guys have just been guys that they've picked up off the market here and there. They haven't really developed a lot of guys, maybe some back-end guys in their bullpen, but for the most part, not a lot of pitching coming out of that system. Most of their time has been focused on the hitters, and they have incredible hitters, but you know, they still have to go out and invest in big-time starting pitching. And you know, that's why when we come up on the trade deadline, the frontline starters who might be available are going to be the guys who draw the most attention because, you know, if you can't develop that guy yourself, you got to go out and give something up to bring him off of another team. It's that important. And, you know, the Royals haven't developed it that well. Duffy's kind of come along slowly and finally is, you know, broken out last year. But, I don't know what the answer is for it.
Yeah, and, you know, this year with Duffy hurt, you know, Vargas has continued to pitch at a very high level so far this year. But, you know, with Duffy out, and then, you know, you've got Vargas, and the rest has just kind of been just patchwork. And even something like Ian Kennedy, who had a really good season last year, you know, he's just having a terrible go of it now with an ERA of 5.33. I mean, he's had some kind of nagging injury issues. Don't know that he's been entirely healthy for his last few starts. So it's a matter of, it's unfortunately the development thing that we just talked about kind of feeds into this, where if you've got a situation like Kennedy and he needs to be in the rotation, you can't give him maybe that extra game or two to get 100% or extra start or two through the rotation to sit out and get fully healthy if you just don't have anybody to put in his place. You know, they've already brought up Eric Skoglund and Jake Junis filling in for some injured starters, and you know, they're really running thin on options in terms of who to plug in for, especially now knowing that you're going to have another 4 to 6 weeks of Duffy being gone out of the rotation. So that's one that you're guaranteed going to have to make up for. So, you know, unfortunately the Royals are in a really tough spot now. And that's, again, goes back to, you know, they're 7 games under .500, 5.5 games back. They haven't been able to make any ground. And will they, you know, are they in a position where, you know, even though the offense, you know, we talked about Hosmer getting back on track and Moose still, you know, keeping the power numbers up. But, you know, even still, if the offense has picked it up a little bit, if the pitching goes down, then does it really matter? You know,
right.
It feels like that was always the kind of 2011 to 2013, the pre-World Series Royals. That was kind of how it always seemed to really fall out, you know, where it was like, okay, the offense would be really hot, but they'd lose games, you know, 8-7.
Right.
And pitching was just nowhere to be found. And then the pitching would heat up, and then they'd lose games 2-1. And the offense couldn't
support. Sounds like April.
Couldn't support the starter. Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, you need to have it all together. And with the lack of consistency they've had in the rotation, it's really tough to do that. So, I mean, I don't know what the answer is at this point. It's, unfortunately, I don't know what the Royals do either. And I could actually, I don't know what the answer is, but I can tell you what the answer is not, and that is trade for more pitchers, because the Royals don't have much to trade, and what they do have that would be worth getting a decent pitcher is not worth giving up when you're 7 games under .500 and 5.5 games back.
Yeah, the writing's kind of on the wall. I mean, you know, I'm never going to root for them to lose games, but, you know, I do recognize that, yeah, it's probably not going to work out. The hitting may not be consistent enough. The starting pitching is thinned out. You know, Kennedy just does not look right. He loses command so often. And, you know, when the other option, the next option is Jason Hamill, who's been very inconsistent himself. It's a little iffy. You know, the other guys in line might be like Chris Young, who I think has taken I think he's taken too much of a bad rap because he hasn't pitched great. I can't say he's pitched great, but his ERA compared to, say, Trevor Bauer, who people still like, is not that different. It's like, you know, 0.15 higher. And you know, Young's not pitching in, like, big spots, but, you know, he's still getting the outs with the, you know, occasional blow-ups, obviously. But
he has been what you expect him to be.
Yeah, he has. And it doesn't mean I want him to, you know, get a number of starts either. He's plenty fine at the back of the bullpen waiting for some kind of blowout to just chew up the innings. And I'm fine with that. You know, it's just, it is what it is, I suppose. Yeah, but I mean, he's your next option unless you go with like Miguel Almonte, which could be possible. You know, you could maybe pick some guys. Luke Farrell always seems like, he seemed like to me from the day he got drafted that he's that guy who's going to get that weird up and down spot start spot.
Oh, yep.
Just over and over. And, you know, not necessarily that he's going to be that good, but he's always kind of seemed like that guy to me. So I guess he's kind of another potential option. You know, there's not a lot. There's not a lot. You really want to hope that Junis and Skoglund can really pick it up and do something and maybe earn some kind of role for next year. But yeah, it's pretty tough. It's tough when you don't have pitching, especially when you don't have much hitting all the time either. So that's how you end up 7 games under.
Exactly. Yes. We've with 3 shows now, we've found 3 equally good reasons why they've been, or more than that, but 3 weeks full of good reasons why they're 7 games under and 5.5 games back. So I think we've kind of covered most of the major Royals news. So the thing we'll kind of end on is perhaps a bittersweet moment in the world of baseball. But the other day, Edinson Volquez for the Miami Marlins pitched a no-hitter. And it just so happened that it was on Yordano Ventura's birthday. Yep. So I don't think that was his first no-hitter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so no-hitter at 33 years old. And it just so happens this year, and on the day of what would have been Ventura's 26th birthday, right?
Yep.
So pitched the no-hitter, kind of a magic. I mean, a no-hitter is always a magical moment, but in this particular case, you know, very emotional. And, you know, it's one of those, like, the recurring theme in the movie Moneyball, you kept hearing the Billy Bean, as played by Brad Pitt, he kept saying, how can you not be romantic about baseball? You know, and when you see a moment like this, you know, Volquez and Ventura, very close, very good friends, very similar background. And, you know, Volquez was kind of his mentor, if you will, for his tenure with the Royals. And, you know, to see him not only throw the no-hitter, but then afterwards dedicate it to not only Yordano Ventura, but Oscar Tavares as well.
Jose Fernandez.
Jose Fernandez, yeah. Not Oscar Tavares, but that's right. Sorry, Jose Fernandez. So to see that, you know, just, you know, that's one of those. It's one of those moments you just kind of, you take it in.
Yeah, it's like, okay, it's great, that's, you know? Yeah, it's like, you think like, okay, maybe there's something weird happening. It's completely coincidence, but maybe there's something. It was pretty cool, and you know, I started watching in the, I think it was after the 6th inning, and you know, he wasn't doing anything all that special. He was just getting guys hit the ball on the ground, and they were making outs, and that was it. And you know, that was about, you know, after following Volquez for a couple of seasons, and especially, you know, his role in the postseason in 2015. And then on top of that, given the day and the circumstances, yeah, it was pretty special. It was, you know, earlier in the day, he had posted on his Instagram a picture of himself with Ventura from, you know, some spring training, probably last year's spring training. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just seemed like, you know, some really cool kind of thing. It seemed so like cinematic. It was like, come on, who would write that script? Volquez, who himself has, you know, had to deal with tragedy. I mean, his, you know, game one of the World Series in 2015, he didn't even know that his father had passed away until he had come off the mound, went to the funeral, came back, still started game 5. The Royals ended up winning it. Just, you know, amazing set of circumstances. And then he comes out and pitches that game on that particular day. It was unique. I
mean, honestly, it's coincidental enough that he's even starting on that day, let alone that he happens to throw a no hitter.
Right.
You know, and so I watched the show, The Leftovers on HBO, and they just had the series finale this past week. And kind of one of the things that they repeated a couple times where they're talking about, you know, trying to figure out what happened. And, you know, at one point, one of the characters says something and somebody's like, oh, that's not at all that's not even possible. That's such a dumb whatever. And she's like, it just sounds like a better story. So, yep. You know, is it entirely coincidental? Yeah, sure. But you know, him doing it for Ventura on his birthday sounds a lot like a better story. And it's just one of those kind of cool things that happens, and you'll never forget it. He'll never forget it. And, pretty cool stuff. So, you know, despite the Royals kind of middling around right now and obviously still feeling, I'm sure, on some level for most people in the Royals organization, and that knew Ventura very closely, his unfortunate tragic death. But it's one of those cool things that you can never plan, you can never expect, but you see it and you're like, man, you know, sports is pretty awesome sometimes. There's a lot of crap, certainly, but sports can be pretty awesome sometimes. And that's one of those things that gets everybody on the same page. You know, sometimes some team will win a game or something, and, you know, fans will be jawing back and forth, or somebody will argue over who's a better player, etc. But a moment like that is one of those where pretty much everybody in the baseball world can take a step back and say, you know what, that's pretty effing cool.
Yeah. And it was.
Absolutely was.
Yep.
So with that bittersweet kind of moment, I think we'll leave you for this week. So we'll come back next week. And Mike, you think we can go 4-for-4 here? 4 weeks? That'd be an entire month that the Royals,
oh my gosh,
as of the date of our recording, would have been 7 games below .500 and 5.5 games back. Let's see.
Does their schedule even work that way? Let's see. They do have an off day. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, it's possible. They could go 3-3 and end up in kind of the same spot.
Boom. Yep. There it is.
They'll be on the West Coast.
Although, unfortunately, we've already discovered, unless they have a rainout, it's impossible to finish 7 games under .500 for the season. So,
but I bet they'll find a way.
Yeah, the Royals will find a way. They've already had one rainout that's pending, right?
Yeah, they have to make up the game against the Yankees.
So
that'll probably matter enough that they'll play it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Yankees are going to make the playoffs. If it was against the White Sox, yeah, it's like, whatever. You guys already got 18 games. We don't need another one. We don't need to put anybody through that.
No, definitely not.
Or if they get rained out against San Diego, no one's going to care. Like,
have they ever? I'm sure they have, but I can't think of it off the top of my head. Having to play a rainout between two awful teams to determine who gets like the first pick in the draft or something.
I bet that's happened.
That'd be hilarious too, though, because it's like
you could almost tank. Yeah, there was a game I saw this video once, and it was the top of the fifth. I don't remember the circumstances, but basically one team, it was raining and it was going to rain more. So one team was trying to hurry up and make outs. And so they were swinging at intentionally bad pitches. The other team was trying to prolong the game so that it wouldn't become official. And so you got guys like throwing the ball into the dirt and the guys swinging at it. And it's like, it's crazy. It's from like 1986 or something like that. I'll have to track it down and send it to you. But yeah, it's that would be something. That'd be like teams intentionally tanking to try to get a better draft pick. That would be a heck of a game. That'd be weird.
That'd be almost more fun than a.
I want that to happen. What would you do? Yeah. Would you start like your first baseman as the pitcher and just?
I know that'd be everybody but your pitching staff gets to pitch. Who wants to pitch? Step on up.
Yeah, it reminds me of the
get ourselves a first draft pick
when they concluded the Pine Tar game. You know, after all the injunctions, they ended with like Ron Guidry was playing second base. He's a left-handed starter, or no, Mattingly was playing second. I think Guidry was in center or something like that. Yeah, it was just making a mockery of it.
Yeah,
it was silly and whatever. But yeah, I think that'd be fun to see.
Absolutely.
Tank Bowl 2017.
Tank Bowl 2017. Let's hope. One can dare to dream, my friend.
We'll see.
So So with that, we'll leave you. We'll be back next week. We'll see if we can go 4-for-4 in this Royals record thing. I'm pumped, Mike. I'm excited to see if we can make this happen. The powers of the Kansas City Baseball Vault have been put to the test.
Oh, no.
The Balboni Watch, the Balboni Watch shall continue. Keep your eyes peeled for that. Hopefully Mike Moustakas continues his run. So if nothing else, we'll have those couple things to talk about next week. But I'm sure the Royals will continue making moves and continue doing things like staying 7 games below .500. But if that means they get to rip the heart out of the Astros, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully there'll be a little bit more of that going on. So we'll see you next week for sure. Be sure to visit our sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn, of course. They've been so great to us. It's a fantastic, great place to go. If you're out to have a drink, you're in Westport. They got lots of – they've basically turned as of like 9 o'clock at night now on the weekends. Westport, they block the roads. It's essentially just a ped mall through the whole thing. So you can walk around, I think, because they check your IDs at the gates, like the little roadblock gates. So you can even take your beers from one bar to another, I think. Haven't tested that.
That is new.
But I thought maybe I think you'd be able to do that, but I'm not certain on that. Don't quote me on that.
Right. But, don't try it and say, well, Jeff said I could.
Oh, yeah. Don't hold on. Don't do any of that action.
Hold on.
But regardless,
this podcast is not legally binding.
That's true. But regardless, you know, Westport is doing a lot to make it a really, really fun. I mean, it's always been fun, but to make it like more conducive to the walking around, because it always felt kind of weird because there's cars driving through all the time. So none of that. Go to Kelly's. Have a great time. Be sure to visit BP Kansas City as we come up on the draft. Clint Scholes, he's been having tons of stuff on the draft. He'll have more stuff. He's always pumping out knowledge about prospects that are already currently in the Royals system. So if you want to have that eye towards the future, now's your time. There's a ton of stuff on bpkansascity.com right now from Clint talking about the Royals' current prospects and farm system and what that portends for the future, but also detailing some information on some draft pick possibilities for where the different directions the Royals can go and who they might think of. And then, of course, after the draft, he's going to have the high-level analysis that you've come to expect from someone as talented as Clint. So be sure to tune in to the website for that, along with all of our other things. Friday notes from Leske coming up this week, from plus, you know, whatever he writes. Craig Brown had an it was Craig, right, that wrote the article about last night's comeback, or was that
it was Leske.
Leske, okay. So, oh, Craig was...
Hey, Craig had Craig something, said, and then they
Craig
won.
Craig was going to write about the loss, and then pulled it because they made the comeback, and yeah. So Leske wrote an article for that. So tons of good content on there. We're always putting out new stuff, so be sure to visit that. But in the meantime, keep watching the Royals. We thank you so much for listening. Couldn't do it without you. We love you all so much. You guys are great. Keep the show going. We love doing it for all you guys. So thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week. Until then, thank you so much for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
Hi, this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, where you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Badette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.